This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to the show. I'm Meera Sivasuthi. It's our health and living segment. And in the studio with me, Dr. Harjit Singh, consultant orthopedic surgeon. Today we're discussing shoulder injuries in sports. It's been part of the Summer Olympic Games since 1964, but it's not the most popular competitive sport in Malaysia. Volleyball still features heavily in co-curricular programs in schools, and go to any beach and you're sure to find a variation of beach volleyball being played. And I know the men love this sport for some particular reason. So Dr. Harjit Singh here to explain your shoulder and injuries in sports. Welcome to the show, Dr. Harjit. How are you today?
Yeah, thank you very much. It's nice to be back.
Could you explain the anatomy of the shoulder? What's actually happening in that area?
Now, the thing about the shoulder is one of the more intriguing joints in the body. Unlike the hip, where it's a very stable joint, you have something like a bowl and your thigh bone sits in it and it's a very stable joint. The shoulder is a prehensile joint. That means you sacrifice stability of the joint to enable a wider range of motion. So it's just like having a golf ball sitting on a tee. So you have very small areas of articulation to form the joint.
So it's very vulnerable, is that what you're saying?
Yeah, in a way it's vulnerable. The second thing is it's very nice to see the way it's designed, because you then have a lot of muscles and ligaments to keep it in a stable position so it does not pop out. And having said that, therefore, we always have to keep this joint healthy. We have to pick up problems early, and then when we treat them, you can continue enjoying a good, mobile, pain-free joint.
Okay, but so do you think we take the shoulder for granted then?
I often think we take any part that's functioning well for granted. We only become mindful about them or it the moment it starts giving problems. And the shoulder is one part that we use a lot. I mean, movements, okay, of the whole arm, the whole structure will start at the shoulder, because the shoulder connects the arm to the rest of the body. So you actually have a whole shoulder girdle, including your collarbone, your shoulder blade, and the arm bone functioning as a unit. And you need to consider that these parts are then connected to your body, your thorax, by muscles, and it allows you to function well.
And what is an appropriate range of motion for the shoulder?
I think among all the joints, the shoulder has the widest range of motion. If, you know, we can move our arm from having it hanging by the side right up to, you know, it being up there against the ears. And we can do circumduction, which is, you know, almost a 360-degree movement. And this is unheard of in other joints such as the knee or the hip. So, you know, this is the joint that I think has been designed almost perfectly by nature. You know, sacrificing structure for function, and in understanding that it requires stability, it's made, you know, certain layers of parts there to hold it in place.
Very versatile.
Very, extremely.
Yeah. And one sport that positions the arms in an overhead position, as I mentioned earlier, is volleyball. Is that, do you see a lot of people coming in with volleyball injuries, or maybe even badminton for that matter?
Yeah, probably if you consider volleyball as a sport, it's not as popular as
badminton.
And even among the team sports, it's not going to be the most popular one, basketball being the more popular one. But the shoulder joint is prone to injury, often as an overuse injury and sometimes as an acute injury. That means, you know, you can have the shoulder joint dislocating due to an extreme activity, or you can just come with shoulder pain and stiffness and reduce range of motion. So both spectrum of problems will trouble you, and you tend to come early. Unlike, you know, sometimes you got a bit of a knee discomfort and you're fine. But most often when the shoulder is involved, it also troubles you when you're sleeping, when you're bathing, and it's going to be there eating at you, and you tend to come.
So in these sports that you mentioned, basketball, volleyball, badminton, are you saying that the use of the shoulder is not in the appropriate range of motion and hence, you know, you land, you are more prone to injuries?
Yeah, I think as sporting medicine moves forward and gets more advanced, we now know that in certain sports, such as volleyball and badminton, you tend to favor certain movements. Like in badminton, you tend to externally rotate. That means move the arm outwards to make your shots. And we know that the range is same, but when you favor rotating it outwards, you lose the ability to rotate it inwards. And that changes the way the shoulder functions. And that itself brings about problems. So now that we know that, we normally tell the player that, okay, yes, you're good, you can do this, but you have to also stretch the other way during your, you know, warm-up so that you balance things out. Having said that, I think that the shoulder is actually comprises of two groups of muscles. So you have the bull, the deltoid, which gives it power. Then the one which keeps the head forever in center and in an optimum position for function is your rotator cuff. Mm-hmm. Those are smaller muscles. They are extremely small. So they fine-tune the function of the bull. Now, when that's not right, that's where problems crop up. And, you know, when you don't have a good rehab program or a good pre-exercise program or pre-sport program, then you will favor building up certain parts of the muscle at expense of another part, and the rotator cuff tends to suffer.
Okay. And so what are other sports that present in high number of shoulder injuries?
Okay.
What about squash, tennis? And that
definitely.
Kind of thing?
Most of the racket sports will suffer where the shoulder is concerned. I mean, a lot of times we tend to see them at an equal level as lower limb injuries, because all of these also require a lot of start and stop. But I think the racket sports like squash, badminton, basketball, volleyball, as you mentioned, where you have the arm in an overhead position for extended periods of time with excessively rapid movements. Often, if the player or the athlete is not conditioned well, it's not very coordinated, where the technique is very important, you tend to put yourself to injury.
I'm very interested. How much of this goes back to the brain and how much we can actually alter the functioning of the brain, which affects something like your range of motion and your shoulder?
Okay, I think we can look at it in a very basic manner. Okay, the shoulder has its range of motion. And athletic training allows you to optimize this movement, okay, so that you get most power, you get good accuracy, and you reduce the chances of an injury. Okay, that's basic. Now, we also know that the position of the arm in space, there is actually a function of the brain where it can actually sense the position of any joint in space. Even if you close your eyes, you know that my arm is up, it's rotated this much and all that. And that is essential for optimal function. Okay, that we can hone. You train well, you can hone that firing between the brain and the body. Now, it's not only the shoulder. The position of your thorax, the rotation at your hip, everything acts in concert with the shoulder to prevent injury. That is why sometimes when you see players coming back after an injury, they have a lot of straps, you know, the tapes placed, mm-hmm. and that is to enhance proprioception so they can retrain the body. So to answer your question simply, if you are a well-conditioned athlete, you can train the mind and body to function in sync.
Fascinating, isn't it?
Yeah. But there are multiple other things that come into play. If your fitness is not up to the mark, you can control this to a certain amount. And when you are fatigued, everything breaks down. Mm-hmm. So you sometimes have injuries on the second quarter or as a tournament progresses on.
So every aspect has to be in sync then.
Yeah. I mean, that's always, they always say the moon, the stars and the everything has to be aligned for you to.
So no room for a mismatch, because that's when injury comes.
Yeah, no, the thing is you have a lot of room for mismatch, because nature or God has created a very good functioning body, the human body. But I think over time, if you have a bad rest play cycle and when small injuries are not attended to, it can't be compensated and then you have problems.
You used the word proprioception, did you? What does that mean?
Yeah, I think proprioception is the perception of the position of joint in space. A lot of mumbo-jumbo words is that if I close my eye and I grip my fist, I still know that it's gripped. I don't have to look at it.
Right.
So that's that sense that we have. So we can be in certain positions and we don't have to look to know. And that is very important in good sporting activities.
Am I complicating things when I sort of assume or draw parallels with the phantom limb phenomenon?
No, I think that's something else totally altogether. Different,
yeah. We won't confuse it. That's we're discussing shoulder injuries in sports with Dr. Harjit Singh, consultant orthopedic surgeon. When we come back, we'll find out more about what are some of these small injuries he's referring to and the more serious ones up next on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Good afternoon. Welcome to the show. It's Health and Living. I'm Meera Sivasodhi. In the studio for his monthly show, Dr. Harjit Singh, consultant orthopedic surgeon. We are discussing shoulder injuries in sports. So whether or not you play volleyball or basketball or racket sports, as he mentioned earlier, badminton, squash, tennis, there is a high chance that you could possibly abuse the shoulder. However, he also in the same breath is saying that the shoulder and the way it has been set up is actually quite fascinating. And it's because of its range of motion and how it's actually linked to the rest of the body. So you mentioned small injuries just now. What do you mean by small injuries? And can those be fixed quite easily?
Okay. Not all shoulder problems require surgery or a big fix. Okay. So, a lot of them require just retraining the technique of movement or play. And once that is sorted, it's fixed, okay, so to speak. So if you are a badminton player and you have a condition where you have tightness in certain positions, then we tell you, okay, you've got tightness here. This is your rehab protocol. You stretch it out well and the pain or tightness goes away. And the effect on other parts which were giving you problems goes away. So that's a good, easy fix. Now, on the other hand, we know that some people have certain situations which they are born with. Now, we know the shoulder is an inherently unstable joint. If you are hypermobile or extremely flexible, which some people are, then you run the risk of being able to move the shoulder out of position.
Oh, yes.
Subluxing or
dislocating. We have seen that. Yeah. Some people are able to do that. Like almost double jointed.
Yeah, it's a party trick. I think, you'll always have some flair. Tap, 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 tap. Little does he realize the only person who's ultimately later in life going to make money is the guy who fixes it. But it's fun. He's going to have fun during the party.
What is he actually doing? Is he dislocating the shoulder?
I think he's actually subluxating the shoulder.
That
means it's moving it not completely out, but a bit out of position. So it looks really disjointed and then he brings it back in. Now, that itself is ligament imbalance and muscle imbalance in function. So that's not very good. Now, when these people come to me and they have dislocated the shoulder because of an accident or a sporting injury, we are very mindful whether we offer him surgery or we offer him rehab. Because surgery can fix the torn part, but it doesn't fix the muscle dysfunction. So these patients, we often say, okay, we give them good rehab. We see how they do before, we offer or not offer surgery. Because the chances of a recurrence is very, very high, particularly in a shoulder. So the thing about shoulder problems is making the decision. We know that, say, the rotator cuff, it wears out over time. So if you have crossed 20, they say 20 to 40, you tend to have some dysfunction or thickening of the rotator cuff, particularly if you take part in overhead activities. Now, with rest, that settles down. So you don't have a problem. Now, if you ignore it, you don't have a good rest play cycle, you don't have good techniques. And as you get older, that swelling can become permanent, causing pain and dysfunction. You ignore it further, the rotator cuff tears. So there's a whole spectrum to it. It's identifying where you are in the spectrum and treating it appropriately.
And when most people come and see you, where are they?
Normally, when they have pain. So pain, normally they're around 30 plus 40. The younger ones come with the more traumatic kind of injuries. The older one with the overuse. So I normally, you know, we take a good history. We ask them a lot of stuff. We examine the shoulder. And a lot of my patients who come with shoulder pain actually have problems in the neck. So we have to be mindful in our discussion of identify where the problem is. Then we do appropriate imaging. We normally start with an X-ray and we move on based on what we think goes on. And we offer them a solution. Most of the time, it's going to be identifying the problem and rehab. Unless you have a problem that's not going to go away with rehab, where there's a lot of weakness of the joint.
So gymnasts have it bad then? Because they do quite a lot of
Not all of them. Because gymnasts tend to be very well conditioned. They're not going to... I mean, I noticed that gymnasts tend to be very well conditioned. The problem comes with the racket sports players.
Okay. Yeah. You said sometimes the neck is the reason why we have shoulder issues. And with most of us, sitting for long hours in the wrong position, there's something called text neck where we're all texting and, you know, sitting in front of our computers with our necks slightly, tilted forward. Do you see that as a big problem eventually affecting all our shoulders?
No, the thing is the symptom. Pain which is originating from the neck, whether it's a text neck, whether it's a posture-related problem or a pinched nerve, often presents with problems at the shoulder and below. So we have to be very mindful that we are dealing with a pure shoulder problem, which comes about when we examine the shoulder or we deal with problems of the neck. So whenever you come with a shoulder problem, you get an examination of the shoulder and also the neck. So I examine the neck and I look at the symptoms and I see whether it's purely from the shoulder or from the neck.
Okay.
Because you can't treat, you know, a problem at the shoulder when the problem is actually at the neck. So, you know, it's just something more that to think about.
Some people you would meet at parties and stuff will come up to you and say, oh, I have a frozen shoulder problem. What is that?
Yeah, the thing about, I mean, there's a nice name to it.
It's called very.
adhesive capsulitis. Every time they
no
say that,
no wonder we say frozen shoulder.
Yeah, and no wonder we charge the big bucks. But the thing is, I think not every stiff shoulder is a frozen shoulder. I mean, when you say adhesive capsulitis or frozen shoulder, there are criteria for it. Now, so often than not, someone says, I've got a frozen shoulder. But when we go through everything, it's something different.
What are the symptoms?
Okay, you tend to have pain and stiffness. It starts off with pain.
Where?
At the shoulder, all around. You feel, you know, there's this night pain happening and all that. Now, and then after a while, you get stiff. And this stiffness is usually not for a single movement. It's for every kind of movement. And the pain then settles down and you're only stiff. So you tend to ignore it a bit. Mm-hmm. And the stiffness gets worse. So there's this whole spectrum of where we catch you. We should catch you early when you just have pain.
Mm-hmm.
Once your stiffness is setting in, then there will be a lot more for us to do to make you better. So take home is not all shoulder stiffness is frozen shoulder.
Okay.
You need to know, because you can just have a rotator cuff tear. You know, you can have just a rotator cuff tendinosis or a tendinitis where it's inflamed and causing you pain. And that, if you do a good examination, you can pick out the differences.
Another factor is muscular imbalance, especially for left and right-handed people, right? Especially, I'm thinking of racket sports, for an example. You overuse the right hand if you're right-handed. Does that then predispose the shoulder to more injury?
I don't think a right-handed guy can comfortably play with the left hand. And you always have better proprioception on your dominant arm. Okay, but then it's also prone to overuse. So we always, just as in any other sport, at the shoulder you have a stretching protocol, a general stretching protocol and a sports-specific stretching protocol, and you have a good play-rest cycle. With that, you protect the joint.
What I'm hearing from you is you know, when we have pain, we wait it out, and when it goes off, then we assume everything is fine, when it may not be. So when do we come forward when there's pain?
Yeah, I think that's a very good question. Now, if I go and play a badminton game and I get a bit of pain at the shoulder while I was doing a smash, and that goes off after about, so much better after about 24 to 36 hours, then I know I'm safe. I rest it out a bit and I put an ice pack and I'm well. And when I get back to playing the next session, there's no pain, then okay, fine, don't see a doctor. Mm-hmm. Now, if you have pain that worsens, or pain which is associated with the inability to comfortably move the full range, that's one. When you have pain while sleeping, I think that's troublesome. Just come and see us. And if you feel that there is weakness associated with your problem, with your pain, then come and see us early. Because whatever you feel as weakness might just be a tear off your tendon causing the pain, and we can get that sorted out.
The use of NSAIDs, we would typically put an ice pack and very happily pop a non-steroidal pill.
Yeah. I think that's widespread in Malaysia.
And it's very easily accessible, right?
Yeah.
So I will take the NSAID for a couple of days and everything's wonderful. That's self-treating. But what's the downside of that?
I think the downside is you might miss something that could have been treated earlier. But being fair, if your general practitioner has given you an NSAID and you are well after the third day or the second day, and as you get back to your activity, you're fine, then it probably was just a muscle strain. Shoulder problems that are potentially going to become problems, they don't settle down that easily. You will know. You might be in denial for a few days after that, but you know things are just not right. So people tend to come.
And how would you know whether it's the pain, it's the bone, it's the tendon, it's the nerve, you know, in the shoulder area?
Yeah.
As you said, it's very intricately designed.
Yeah.
How would you know?
So the first thing is the story, how it happened. Now, and then it's the character of that symptom that you have the pain. Now, nerve-related pain is very often, they come with tingling, burning kind of pain. They don't come with this dull or sharp pains in certain particular parts. Now, once we have asked for the story, so to speak, mm-hmm. we examine the joint. Now, trying to correlate the story to our examination, and if it fits, we know that, okay, this is the part that's probably damaged. Now, we want to know how much and we want to confirm it. That's where we go to investigations. We do an X-ray and ultrasound, maybe an MRI. But we are very mindful to what our cone-down diagnosis is, because sometimes an MRI will show you a shadow,
yes,
where there's no problem. So you can't do an MRI first and then examine the patient. For the shoulder particularly, you have to do this. You have to have an idea of what's going on. You have to know that these kind of spots have these kind of injuries, and then you go forward.
Okay. So you, in your head after examination, already vaguely know roughly what's going on?
Most of the time, I know. Okay. There are times where I even only do an X-ray. I don't do anything else. Mm-hmm. I say, okay, you know what? Let me have a look whether you've got a spur, you're aged 40, and this is the problem. Then I said, okay, you don't have weakness. You know, I think we rehab you a bit. We get the muscle to fire well and let's see how it goes. So if that works, then fine. But there are patients who come in and they are insistive that, oh, you know what, I want to do a scan and have a look now. I mean, we always try to please our clients to a certain extent, and we get things done.
Okay. You're very big on rehab.
Yeah.
Why
I'm
is
lucky.
That?
I got a good rehab. No,
great team.
You see, the thing is,
physiotherapy.
Yeah, I think that in sporting injuries, the goal is to fix the patient or the athlete. Okay, how I do that doesn't matter, because once I have a happy patient, I get more patients. Now, if they do not need surgery and I know that this is a functional issue, then I key them to rehab and they get well. Okay, there are situations where you definitely need surgery. Athletes with a torn ACL, athletes with a rotator cuff tear, athletes with a shoulder dislocation, surgery. Then there are the in-betweens. So the in-betweens, the conversation goes like, okay, now this possibly need surgery in, say, 40%. 60% do well with rehab. And I say that, you know, in your case, your athletic level is not too high. We go for rehab. If it works for you, good. If it doesn't, then you need surgery. Okay. So I think you have to be understanding the whole spectrum.
So surgery is almost like last resort.
We try in certain situations where you come with an injury and a totally torn rotator cuff. Then we know that we repair it within 2 weeks. We get the best results possible. So we tailor it.
What determines the success of the intervention?
Okay, I think it's the patient. Okay, if you have certain comorbids which impair healing, like diabetes, you tend to have a lesser of a result. It tends to make the shoulder stiff. Okay, you have to have a surgeon which has identified the problem well, and you have to have very good rehab. And as you get better, you have to still understand that the body needs to heal. And the fifth thing, once you are well, you have to prevent it from happening again. So I think then you get the five and you're fine.
But the last step is a little difficult, isn't it? Preventing it from happening again. Because when you feel better, you just go all out and do things all over again.
If you have had a surgery and gone for long rehab, most of the time you will take the preventive steps to prevent it from happening again. I'm not even talking from the part that has had surgery. The other side, you know, you never know. You've got two of everything.
Yeah. How successful is surgery really?
For the shoulder?
Yes.
I think if it's for the correct indication, very successful. Just like the knee. I mean, if you're not very sure and you partake something that maybe didn't need it, then they tend to not be very happy.
When do you do shoulder surgeries?
Every day. No, I mean, what do you mean? Okay. If you have a shoulder which is dislocating frequently in an athlete, maybe the second time, some even say the first time it pops out, then we repair the torn part to prevent it from dislocating again, because every time it dislocates, it damages the cartilage and bone. And if you ignore that, you need a bigger surgery. So that's when I operate, definite. If I have a rotator cuff tear which is coming with predominantly weakness, then I know that function-wise, this arm or shoulder is almost non-functional. You can't lift it up. It's very weak. Surgery. If you have the other joint between the collarbone and the scapula, the acromioclavicular joint, and it's dislocated, and there are criteria of demand, we operate on it. So actually, things are kind of clear. There are protocols when you operate. And the third thing is, sometimes you offer the patient like, okay, 60% do well with rehab. And he says, no, I still want surgery. Mm-hmm. Then if he understands that, then we go ahead with surgery. It's not a decision purely made by the doctor.
Sportsmen and sportswomen aside, what do ordinary people come in with? Sort of shoulder injuries?
Yeah, they come with the same
problems. Same injuries.
But predominantly, they come a bit later. And they come with overuse injuries. That means it's always that the warm-up wasn't proper. They haven't done the proper stretches. They play at a level that they should not be playing from the outset, and then they get injured.
Do you think everybody is able to continue playing at a certain level past 40, for an example? Especially when it comes to contact sports.
No, I think they definitely can, because I always tell you that age is a number. Okay,
but everything's breaking down whether we like it or not.
But I think you can always keep up with it if you are mindful that, you know, maybe you warm up a bit longer. Okay, wear the appropriate attire, you know, taper the way you play. And you know that you build up from a base. You don't expect yourself to straight away perform at, you know, what a 20-year-old person can. And mind you, if you are a conditioned athlete at 40, you probably will be performing as well or even better than some underperforming 20-plus-year-olds.
Yeah, if you are a conditioned athlete. Right?
Yeah.
So mindfulness, very, very important.
Yeah, I think it's important. It better be important.
It should, but you know, nobody really is practicing. It's not easy to practice mindfulness, honestly. So how do we prevent damage to the shoulder? Is there anything that we can do?
I think the main thing is to understand that problems happen at the shoulder. And when problems happen, you need to know when you need to visit us immediately or when you can self-treat. And don't be in denial. Understand that the shoulder is just like any other part of the body. It needs proper rest. It needs proper warm-up. It needs a warm-down. And, you know, it needs love and care.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you enjoy sports, racket sports, volleyball and all, and you want to continue enjoying it, then you know that you need to protect the shoulder, simple.
Okay. And if you have had injury and you're going to go back into the sport, how do you prevent new injury?
Yeah, the thing is, during your rehab and recovery, you would go through a lot of exercises to strengthen the shoulder. So you just need to keep at those. And probably when you go back, start off at a lower level before you go back to what you were, if possible.
Your message on shoulder injuries in sports?
I think the shoulder is often a neglected target joint for injury. People tend to just dismiss it as something minor. And often, if we treat this early, you can actually fix it well and you can get back faster.
Thank you very much for joining us today. Dr. Harjit Singh, consultant orthopedic surgeon on shoulder injuries in sports on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.